Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Russian President Vladimir Putin has offered Kiev the opportunity to restart direct negotiations in Istanbul, which it unilaterally walked away from in 2022. Also, Trump's visit to the Middle East doesn't include a stop in Israel. Is Bibi on the ropes? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Mark. We have an announcement only hours ago, actually, where President Putin announced the direct negotiations with the Kiev regime in Istanbul in on May 15th. So this is a bit of a repetition. It's being reported as something that's very big and new. We have Trump saying, think of the hundreds of thousands of lives that will be saved when this endless bloodbath is hopefully over. It will be a whole new and much better world. This is what he said on Truth Social. We have the French President Macron. This is according to AFP. It's a first step, but it's not enough. He claims that this is an alleged looking for a way out, still wanting to buy time. We could have expected those responses from the two different leaders. What's your take, Mark?
Yeah, Trump's emotive comments about saving human life always strike me as a bit rich, as he's threatening in loud, screaming capital letters to bomb Iran once again. And he's already hit Yemen 1,000 times on, although now Trump seems to have capitulated and the U.S. Navy has retreated out of the Red Sea away from the Houthis. But regardless, this is nothing new. At least most of it is nothing new.
Well, right? I mean, there's a venue, there's a date.
A venue, yes. So what is going on is there was another meeting of the Coalition of the Irrelevant. I mean, the Coalition of the Willing in Kiev just after Russia's victory. Day celebrations. Starmer that was there, Macron, Merz, Tusk, and a few other irrelevants. And supposedly, they at least have tacit U.S. backing, with Zelensky demanding that Putin unconditionally accept a 30-day ceasefire or suffer EU sanctions, which will further EU sanctions, because the first 28,000 weren't enough. You know, the next one will definitely be the straw that break the camel's back, or suffer the, you know, these consequences. And Russia is playing a game, right? There's a dance going on. Everyone knows that these peace talks are going to go nowhere. They just want the blame for the failure in Trump's eyes to fall on someone else. Trump has said two things. He wants a ceasefire now, and now he's hit on that he wants direct talks with Russia and Ukraine. So while the Kiev regime jumps on the ceasefire and says there will be no talks without a 30-day ceasefire so that the Kiev regime can rearm, rebuild, get European troops on the ground, Russia is trying the different tactic. This is nothing new except for the date and time. But what Putin is attempting to doing is to deflect and misdirect from the ceasefire ultimatum of Kiev and basically issuing his own ultimatum for direct negotiations to happen this week at a date and time, in Istanbul. So this, again, this is a dance. This is a diplomatic, you know, or maybe you want to say hot potato. See who is the last one to catch it and catch Trump's ire for his great peace, quote unquote, plan to fail. I think ultimately, though, unfortunately, there's too much impetus in the West behind this. No matter what, Russia's going to catch the blame. But they're making a good attempt to try to avoid it.
Well, and George, I was going to say it's very interesting, but it's not very interesting that the venue is Istanbul, because the Russians are not so subtly messaging, you know, we've been here before and it was you guys that walked away. And I think this is a reminder of that. And those that have been following this tragic, unnecessary conflict, are that this is going to come top of mind. I mean, you guys were this far apart, and look what's happened during the course of this conflict. You're in a much weaker position economically, militarily, and to reflect upon what Mark just said here, Russia's not so isolated in the world. Did you see who was on Red Square during the Victory Day parade? Go ahead, George.
No, I think that's right. And in Putin's announcement, he talked obviously about what happened in Istanbul. And he said that we didn't walk away from the talks in Istanbul. It was the Ukrainians who walked away and refused to engage in any further negotiations after Istanbul. And then, of course, Putin also talked about, well, you talk about ceasefires. You didn't observe any of the ceasefires that we've been talking about. You didn't observe the ceasefire on the energy infrastructure. You didn't observe the Easter ceasefire. You didn't observe the 3-day May 9th ceasefire. But I think that it is important that what Putin is doing here is playing on the differences between the Europeans exactly. and the Trump administration. Trump did not endorse the 30-day ceasefire. If you read his truth, he said, ideally, we will have a 30-day ceasefire. Ideally means maybe it'd be nice to have, but he's not issuing any kind of an ultimatum that the, as Mark said, the coalition of the irrelevant issued. They issued an ultimatum. You either sign on to this 30-day ceasefire or we impose sanctions. What Trump said is that, well, ideally we'll have a ceasefire, but once a ceasefire takes place, whoever violates it, then that'd be sanctioned. He didn't say that or it'll be against Russia. He says whoever violates it. Ursula von der Leyen said, well, if Russia violates the ceasefire, we will impose sanctions on Russia. She's already has that in mind, that, of course, that Russia will have sanctions. And when J.D. Vance last week talked about Munich, he said we want to see direct negotiations between Russia and Ukraine. So I think that's what Putin is saying. Okay, well, we're offering direct negotiation. You said you wanted it. Here, this is direct. So they're saying, well, are you going to be against this? You're saying you don't want direct negotiation. So he's put the Trump administration in a bind. They have to then make a decision. Why do they object to direct negotiations? This is what you've been called for. Trump said the other day, hey, get this war sorted out. He said, to Russia and Ukraine. He said, that's my message to you. Get it sorted out. So Putin's saying, well, here, we're offering direct negotiation. So it's actually a very clever ploy on Putin's part.
But Mark, also, isn't it a reminder of what has happened during the course of the conflict from the Istanbul of 2022 to now? Because I think that's not a so subtle reminder to the Ukrainians and actually to their backers, the Europeans, that the deal was very had preference to Ukraine, not to Russia in 2022. We're not going to see the same kind of agreement now, even if we were to parenthetically go forward May 15th negotiations. What kind of outcome could that even generate? Because it's not going to be the same deal that it was in 2022.
Yeah, I think it's kind of moot. No one really expects Zelensky to send a team. He still has a diktat that no one can negotiate with Russians, right?
What kind of pressure can the Trump administration, if they so want, to put on the Kiev regime to show up?
Well, theoretically, they could do what they claim to have already done and halt military aid and intelligence to the Kiev regime. But just this, in the last week, we see more U.S. signing off on military transfers. Germany just announced it's sending 100 more Patriot missiles, long-range artillery shells, and other armaments, and they had to have the U.S. sign off on that, and they obviously did. So that's the fourth weapon package that Trump has either sent or signed off on in the last week. And I'm sorry, I think that the if Putin does not accept a ceasefire, and Russia has made clear they will not accept the 30-day ceasefire. It's not to their benefit. They've been down this road before. Minsk 1, Minsk 2, right? They're not going to let the West rearm the Kiev regime while it's back on its heels. That's not going to happen. And inevitably, I think, you know, there's not going to be any other way around that. And then Trump will put sanctions on Russia. Some of them will be against Russia, probably the Russian Central Bank. Not that it will have necessarily any great effect, but the rest of the sanctions will be more Trump sanctions against the world, secondary sanctions to try to get them to stop buying Russian energy, to get them to stop trading with Russia. And I think China and India, the two biggest on that block, have already also indicated that they are not going to be dictated by Trump or any U.S. leader about who or they will or will not trade with.
Well, but George, let's say that Mark is right about Trump's frustration and how he'll react to Russia. What happens to the warming of the bilateral relationship between Moscow and Washington? Is that going to go down the tubes?
Yeah, I think it will. Yeah, go down.
Mark gave the visual effect. Okay, you can give the verbal.
Yeah, no, I think it would go down the tube. That's why I'm not entirely convinced that that's what he's going to do. Again, if you go back to J.D. Vance's presentation in Munich, he said, we have gone beyond this obsession with the 30-day ceasefire. He said obsession, he used that word. So therefore, it's clear that within the administration, there are voices saying, look, if you obsess over this 30-day ceasefire, then we're not going to get anywhere. Russia is not going to accept the 30-day ceasefire. So therefore, we need to do something a little more than that. We've got to present some kind of a framework that Russia can accept, or at least Russia can negotiate, because if we do this, if we make it this a fetish, which is exactly what the Europeans are doing, because it's clear from what Vance said, he knows the game the Europeans are playing. The Europeans are trying to do everything they can to sabotage any possible negotiated outcome in Ukraine. They are sabotaging. That's why they want to make this a big issue over the 30-day ceasefire. They know Russia is going to reject it, and that's why they said, "Oh, the Trump is with us." But where was Trump? Trump wasn't there. You know, they said, "Oh, we're speaking on behalf of Trump." Well, they weren't speaking on behalf of Trump. They were speaking on behalf of themselves. So the Americans know this, and so there's at least a possibility there, precisely because, as you said, if they go down this path and they're going to impose sanctions on Russia, and it may happen, then that's it. The end of the bilateral relations, it'll be a failure on Trump's part, as he failed during his first term. He wanted to improve relations with Russia. He got sidetracked by Russiagate. He got pushed into doing the sanctions. Oh, I'm tougher on Russia than Obama was. And that's what's going to happen again this time. He's going to go down this path of sanctions, and then that's it. End of any possible improvement of relations.
Well, J.D. Vance also said this week that Russia is asking too much to the war. And it has to be said
but he said that's always happens in the first step of any negotiations. That's what he said.
All right, gentlemen, hold your thoughts. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. All right, gentlemen, before we move on to Trump's visit to the Middle East, I want to finish off what we said in the first half. So, Mark, given what George said, and you were interjecting as we went to the break, then this is Trump's war. He's inherited Biden's war, and there will be a battlefield outcome to this conflict. I mean, I'm trying to connect all the dots here, Mark.
Yeah. So J.D. Vance, as George said, that is what always happens. You know, one side asks for too much in the beginning of negotiations. But Russia's not going to back down from the negotiations. In fact, they're likely to ask for more. Why? Because they are winning on the battlefield. And it needs to be reminded again and again and again. You can't say it enough. The U.S. is not some third party arbiter or mediator. This is their proxy war against Russia. However much Trump is trying to create a degree of political remove, this is his war now. Every Russian that dies at the hand of a U.S. weapon is being killed by Donald Brandon Trump, right? Because that is the cause of it. And that is certainly something that is always at the Russians' mind. And Russia right now, I think whatever they may say publicly, they think this, one, only ends on the battlefield, and two, only ends with regime change in Kiev. That's the only way it ends. And they're already prepared for relations with the Trump administration to go down the tube if that's what happens.
George, you do want to retort before we go move on?
Except I'd say that that's not what Russia is saying publicly. Russia has made very clear that it distinguishes the approach of the Trump administration from that of the Europeans. And they're saying that the Trump administration is one that we can work with. We like their approach. We like their attitude. And so they haven't yet made this the issue. Oh, you are militarizing this. You're sending all this weaponry. You know, you're involved in the war. They are essentially accepting, okay, you're still sending military stuff, but this is stuff that had already been promised by the Biden administration. You're just continuing with this. It's a kind of inertia that this is going to continue.
Well, but
George, they'll go beyond it. But at the moment, the Russians are cutting the administration some slack.
Yeah, but they're coming out with some newfangled ideas of allowing Ukraine to buy weapons from the Europeans using funds allocated. I mean, they're trying to. Both sides are maneuvering.
Yeah, it's a maneuver.
All right. We're not going to solve the Ukraine crisis on this program today. Okay, I want to move on. Mark, Donald Trump is making his first trip abroad in his second term. He's going to the Middle East. As I said in my introduction, he's not making a stop in Israel. Much has been made of the growing rift or split or whatever word you want to use between Trump himself and Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister. I don't know how much to read into that, but not going to Israel does seem to be significant. And he has made, you've already mentioned, okay, the United States declared victory in Yemen. I don't want to waste a lot of time on that. Obviously, it was the U.S. that capitulated there. The Trump administration is with the Abraham Accords, has given an exemption now where Saudi Arabia can acquire the full fuel cycle for civilian nuclear power, something that was not part of the original Abraham Accord for the Saudis to normalize relations with Israel. And then even stranger for me, the Trump administration has its own private initiative for Gaza. There's a lot going on simultaneously as he's flying to the region right now. Your thoughts on all these moving pieces?
Yeah, I really think this is a nothing burger story. Really little relevance. Obviously, Saudi Arabia is not going to just renew to the Abraham Accords after everything that has happened and is happening with Gaza. They've made that perfectly clear. Trump is going to the Middle East. First, he actually went to the Vatican briefly for a funeral. So this is second trip. But that was just a brief stopover and to listen to Zelensky during the Pope's funeral. That was kind of shameless. But Trump is going back to the Middle East. You might remember in his first administration, he went there and he did sword dances, and there was this weird photo op with him and Sisi and the leader
of
MBS touching this glowing orb like they're Saruman and in The Lord of the Rings or something like that. Really weird. But he knows that he's not going to be criticized in the Middle East. They're going to roll out the red carpet for him. They're going to shower him with money, right? Or at least the U.S. economy with investments. Saudis promised some $600 billion of investment over so many years. And UAE topped that off with $1.4 trillion over slightly longer years. They're just showering money. This is what you do. Trump is playing at being God Emperor of mankind. Trump loves that. And they know, right, how to get on his good side. You flatter him, you give him these airs, and you throw some money in his direction. And I think that this is primarily what this trip is about. The administration is trying to make it about business deals, meaning the Arab leaders throwing money at Trump so that he stays on their good side during the next 4 years. I think too much is being made of this, of any split between Netanyahu and Trump. We've actually heard this before, and it turned out to be nothing. Let's make it clear. Trump's buttocks are stamped and owned by Adelson and the AIPAC lobby in the United States. I mean, that's Trump's Israel first foreign policy.
Well, I mean, we'll see how this goes. I mean, this is something that surfaced a few days ago. You know, Georgia, when you have writers in the New York Times saying this government in Israel is not our ally. I mean, it's hard to disagree with Mark about the donors, but I mean, this came out of the Israeli press too, which, you know, where Trump is at odds with Netanyahu. Trump fired his national security advisor, which I'm sure he was loath to do so early on. But, I mean, is there something here? There's a lot of smoke. Is there any fire?
I think there is. I think that these are all a number of quite significant moves. I mean, the story is he's now broken off direct communications with Netanyahu. It's this, and when the firing or shuffling off of Waltz happened, the White House put out that what really irked Trump was that Waltz was plotting behind Trump's back to get the United States involved in bombing of Iran. Now, Trump does not like people going around behind his back, and he doesn't like Netanyahu doing this. So he clearly is very angry with Netanyahu. Last time when he went on in 2017 on this trip to the Middle East and he visited Saudi Arabia, he also visited Israel. And he's not visiting Israel this time. There is talk that he's going to bring up the issue of a Palestinian state. Now, we don't know what the borders are. Nonetheless, that would be something that would be very, very annoying to Netanyahu, because earlier on, Trump seemed to be moving away from the whole two-state solution. Yeah. But if he does bring up a Palestinian state, that is clearly then distinguishing himself from Netanyahu. And, I don't think he needs he has no ideological commitment to Israel. He never has. The donors were important to him in his first term because he needed their money for re-election. He's not seeking re-election now, so he doesn't need Adelson money now. He can actually think about the Middle East free of any of the pressure. And the story is, okay, there's another one, maybe that hasn't been confirmed, AIPAC has been shuffled off from Mar-a-Lago. That basically AIPAC isn't getting anywhere in Mar-a-Lago. So we'll have to see whether this is significant. I don't think Trump really wants to go down the path of bombing Iran. I mean,
That's my next question, because Mark, you said that Trump, he loves to be adored. He wants to be the emperor of the world and all. We all know that, okay? And he loves money being thrown, because he probably thinks it's his money, investment in the United States. But, I mean, is he going there to campaign for war against Iran? Because the countries that he's visiting, they don't want a war with Iran.
Yeah, they don't. And I think he part of it may be getting their agreement that if it comes, that they will at least give the U.S., flight out of the military bases and so forth, even if they don't directly participate it. Now, as of 2 weeks ago, I was sure that it wasn't in Iran's or the U.S.'s, the Trump administration's interest for a war with Iran. Right. They have other priorities. They're stuck in Ukraine. They want to pivot to China. And they're happy, I think, to let Israel do whatever it wants to the Palestinians, right? But they don't want to get involved. However, the Trump administration's absolutely absurd demands for their nuclear deal demand over the last week that Iran give up its civilian nuclear power program, which it's entitled to under international law and the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and stop all support support for any Shiite axis of resistance groups in the Middle East, because the U.S. is allowed to arm proxies, but Iran is not. I mean, that's the deal. That is, I mean, unless Trump backs away from that, which he has done from other things, but that's a path to war. Demands like that are a path to war. And if Trump really doesn't want to bomb Iran, then he should probably stop making social media posts screaming like a child in all capital letters, "I will bomb Iran." I mean, seriously.
Yeah, well, and George, I mean, it has a this is turning into the dog that, it's always the sky is falling. The sky is falling. But Trump's going to have to come to some kind of decision. And I think that's what a lot of the part of this is it's going to be about. I mean, just exactly what is this administration's policy? They want to know.
Well, that's it. But I mean, when it comes to this civilian nuclear program, there is a real quite easy way that they can get out of it. All I can say is, well, Iran can have nuclear enrichment as long as it's under the oversight of the IAEA. You can just think, and then if he gets that, I think Iran would probably agree to that. Then he can say, hey, I've gone beyond the JCPOA. I mean, Obama didn't have that. I have that. It's under the IAEA oversight. After all, Saudi Arabia would also, if Saudi Arabia does have the full enrichment fuel cycle, it would also be under the auspices of the IAEA. So he can do that. And the question of, the ballistic missiles and the support for the Shiites, Trump is saying the only thing, he has said a number of times, the only thing I care about is that Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons. Steve Witkoff in the recent interview said,
we've run out of time, gentlemen.
It doesn't have nuclear weapons.
The problem is that can anybody trust Donald Trump considering he walked away from a nuclear agreement before? All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Moscow and in Budapest. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.